Good afternoon. Today is a wet Friday, January the 20th, 20th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Arnie Herskovic from SHN, et cetera, et cetera. And cheers.
Hey, cheers, Brian. It is a drippy day, all right.
It is. We've got St. Joe's Tower.
Yeah.
We can talk a little bit about that. We got roads going on.
Yeah.
You might have come in with something other than wet.
Yeah, so I didn't. It's not far from your parking lot to the building, and I got pretty wet just in that little distance.
good thing we like you and let you in the front door, huh?
Thank you.
Be a little bit wetter yet. So we got a number of things to talk about, as well as drive slow, be safe, and we'll be back.
I'm Jim Mongi, principal of St. Mary's Catholic School and Preschool. Our preschool program is designed to teach and model basic educational and social skills that children will need for success in kindergarten. Students learn about numbers, shapes, and colors. They begin pre-reading and writing. They develop problem-solving and sharing skills. They learn that school is fun. St. Mary's Preschool provides the foundation for a lifetime of learning. Give us a call today at 822-3877, license number 125-401-910.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 416. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Arnie Herskovic. Drying out, almost.
Almost dry.
Okay.
Good.
It's just because you're such a big guy.
Not much to dry. Good point.
Our quote this afternoon comes from Martin Luther King, Jr.
Oh, how appropriate.
It's kind of his week, huh?
It is.
All right. Quote, we're prone to judge success by the index of our salaries or the size of our automobiles, rather than by the quality of our service and our relationship to humanity.
That's a good quote. Yeah, I would agree with that.
You would?
Yeah.
Way to go.
Hey. That's a good observation.
Idle chatter.
Yeah.
So the tower is, according to what Joe Mark said yesterday on the show, is about 45 minutes. The heavy hitters get the opportunity to go through.
First time through.
Yeah. See what's going on. Tomorrow, obviously, the public, and on Sunday. What impression do you have of the project, how it was handled? But I think more critically, what does it mean to the community?
Brian, we had a lot to do with it. We were involved in inspection work all the way through, so our guys got to see it firsthand from the ground up. You know, how the process unfolded. I think you got to give St. Joseph System a lot of credit for stepping up to the plate. And the reason I say that, a lot of people are ducking and running from the 2013 deadline that the state has established for mandate for meeting the seismic challenge that a lot of hospitals in the state faced. And I think they stepped up and they said, we're going to meet it. And they have met it. And they're obviously ahead of, you know, they've met the deadline. I think going in, they thought it would probably be done sooner than it is now. But on the other hand, it is, you know, it's still well ahead of the deadline schedule, which is great. And it's never an easy feat because obviously the amount of time and money and fundraising and the cost of the project itself is pretty daunting when you first look at it. But the fact that they've...
And the success that they've had associated with that
is fantastic.
Really,
it's fantastic. They've met the deadline. They've got the project ready to go. It's, you know, it's a tremendous asset to the community. When you look at how we look at attracting new people to come work for us, I'm sure a lot of companies do. One of the criteria is, do we have good health care?
They'll be asking those questions?
They ask those kind of questions. Even
really?
Even people starting out in their career at the front end who are probably very healthy for the most part want to know, does the community have a good hospital system?
Well, maternity.
Maternity, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So this is a wonderful thing that we have, state-of-the-art, best facilities available and services, you know, to all our citizenry. And I think it's one of the things too, not only at the starting of career, but people in mid-career or people later in their career want to know is do we have good hospital coverage in our community?
Probably not maternity.
No. And other communities are going to be taking on similar projects too. Willits is in the throes of getting a new hospital built.
They're not going to keep the same location? They're going to just start fresh?
They're going to have to start fresh probably. They will have to keep the same facility until the new one's ready, but You have other communities, too, that are similarly faced. The problem in the big cities, is my understanding, talking to friends of mine who work at Kaiser and other facilities in Northern California, is they are not really going to fix a number of their hospitals. They're going to close them by next year. So this is going to mean that the
public...
Oh, yes. They're going to close about close to a dozen hospitals in the Bay Area. So people will be traveling a greater distance to go for medical care. And it's not going to be good, necessarily. I mean, you're going to have longer, you know, emergency rides, longer distances just to see your primary care physician. And that's going to have a major impact on the quality of life in those areas.
Or do they change a hospital, redefine it as something else?
Yeah, they may retool, but the fact of the matter is you'll be traveling farther and it will be less convenient. And, you know, it's going to be one of the things you moved to that particular neighborhood for was probably the proximity to facilities. Now, all of a sudden, you're not going to have them. So this is a major impact. You know, here we are fortunate enough to have it right centrally located. So we're available and we're here.
Does that put us in a position to be able to recruit better businesses, more businesses?
It certainly can't hurt.
Give me that.
You know. It helps. It does help a lot. I think, you know, when you have to go out of the area for services, you have to, so to speak, because you don't have the facilities, then, you know, it does hurt you in terms of trying to attract people because they find that out, you know, relatively easily. But the fact that you do have a brand new tower, brand new facilities, state-of-the-art equipment, et cetera, is a big plus.
So what's driving Willits? Just the fact that the codes are changing statewide and they're kind of boxed in the corner?
Their hospital is built in the 20s and it doesn't meet any of the current codes. And so you have to bring that up to, you know, something in the current modern era.
So is that a private hospital?
Yeah, it's a private hospital.
Okay, so somebody just got the money and they're going to start doing
They're working on it. They're going to have a heck of a time with the deadline. You know, I think ultimately...
Because that'd be a pretty major regional too, because Ukiah doesn't have anything...
Not much. So I think what you're looking at is, you know, they may not meet the 2013 mandate, but they're at least working on it. And hopefully, I think the state's going to give people who are not quite finished with the product some additional time to meet it. But the 2013 date has been looming in the background for quite some time.
Yeah, that's no surprise.
No surprise. But unfortunately, in some of the bigger cities, you know, you're going to see hospitals closed because they're just not going to be able to deal with it. It's too costly. They won't meet the timeline. So, you know, it's a big problem. I mean, you've got a lot of hospitals that don't meet the seismic mandate, and that's a tough one. It's a very tough one.
KINS, News and Information Times, 421. We'll be back with more from Arnie Herskovich.
Hi, this is Eric from Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai. You know, I think a lot of people forget that we have a great selection of used cars available. We might not have the inventory that some of the larger dealerships do, but I know our quality used cars stack up against anybody else's in the county. Plus the fact, if we don't have something on our lot, come on in, see us, and we can probably find it for you. We have a quality selection of some very nice used cars, what most people were looking for. But again, if we don't have it on our lot, we can probably find it for you at Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai.
Hi, my name is Mark Diaz from Northwood Hyundai, and I invite you to come down. We're open from 8:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night for your shopping convenience. Closed Sundays to be with family. And as my dad used to say, don't bring much money, you won't need it. That's Northwood Hyundai, 7th and D, Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 425. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Arnie Herskovich. Arnie, some of the different challenges that are out there. Last time you were talking about funding challenges with the Willits Bypass.
Mm-hmm.
And you were pretty pumped and excited that it's going ahead. Any developments with Willits and with that particular project? Are things being changed at all? Is this money been set aside with some of the funny stuff that the governor and the assembly are doing now? Is that money in jeopardy at all?
Brian, to answer the short answer on the money in jeopardy part, no, it's not in jeopardy at all. The state has set that aside for some years now, and that's already been banked and ready and waiting for the groundbreaking of that project. So they can't, in other words, not touchable. At one time, it was when this, you know, there was threats, and they did carry through on that in Los Angeles, took some additional money we could have had for the project. But the bulk of the funding for the Willits Bypass, it may not cover it all, depending on what the bids come out to be, but the bulk, the majority of that funding is intact, and the project is going through the final stages of permit approval, and hopefully will be under construction either later this year or early next year. I'm hoping, and it's a big project. It's a good 5-year construction cycle.
Now, by construction, most of us think, okay, vroom, vroom, fire up the machines. We're moving dirt, boys. Let's go. When you say construction, is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about some of the preliminary stuff before the big vehicles get out there and things start moving around?
Well, construction, of course, means a lot of different things to people. In this case, it's going to be the preliminary things, the site grading and the site prep. And you know, but you'll see a lot of equipment mobilizing. You'll see a lot of effort. It's a big undertaking. And you know, it's about a 5-6 mile loop around the east side of Willits. You know, obviously, the main highway will still be completely open the whole time while it's being constructed, because you're looking at the latter part of this decade before it'll be completed. So it's, you know, if we assume it starts in 14 with 5 years, that's 2019. So it's going to be around for a while. It, you know, it has some major interesting features to it, including elevated structures over wetlands.
With the bypass of the national park,
mm-hmm.
What is it, the $1 million mile or $1 billion mile? A little bit of surprise. And things moved, and there were things in the canyons that they didn't think were there, et cetera, et cetera.
True.
Willits doesn't have the same terrain. They don't have the redwoods and some of that, that historical. Do you think there's much potential for any surprises like we see at this end of our area?
Probably not as many surprises that the Redwood Park achieved. Of course, there's a lot of hillsides there that are now rocked in and sloped because of, as you pointed out, there were some major issues that no one really anticipated. But there's always, on a big project, there's always a possibility of some, you know, something that can be found along the route that nobody anticipated. You do your best to try.
Indian stuff?
Oh, you have to look for that, of course. If that materializes, then that stops the project, you know, dead in its tracks.
Hasn't that, though? Aren't those studies part of the preliminary?
They are. They are. Oh, absolutely. They're required.
But just if they stumble on something.
Yeah, I think back about a few years ago when in San Jose, as they were under construction, they found an Indian burial ground right in the middle of their project. So, and they had to wait months and months to get that totally taken out and relocated and properly dealt with. And that's what you do. You stop all construction and archaeological finds.
Oh, you can't start at the other end?
No, you can't do anything. You got to wait for that completely to be dealt with, and then you move on.
Okay,
after.
So you've got a 6-mile... If you're a quarter mile in at one end and they find something, the whole project shuts down?
The whole project shuts down.
So they can't be working even though it's 4 or 5 miles away?
No, you got those guys. The archaeological find thing shuts your project down pretty much dead in the water.
Oh, really?
So it's not good. And you don't want, well, it's not good to ever encounter that. And hopefully, you know, the work is done on the front end, as you pointed out, to best as possible, but best as known that where sites have been. But you never know. You can always encounter. That's probably one of the most jarring finds when you find something like that. That really stops construction pretty much dead in its tracks. But on the other hand, it doesn't occur that often. Usually there's very good historical records, good mapping, and the archaeological people are pretty much on top of it, along with the Indian tribes who they consult with before the project begins. A lot of that work, as you point out, has already been pretty much completed quite a while ago.
So you're hoping something gets dug in the next 4 or 5 months?
Well, I would say that's probably optimistic. It's going to be a little longer than that. But maybe by, as I pointed out, maybe by the latter part of this year, early next year, they'll be underway on it. And then you'll see, you know, the various equipment coming into play. You have to go through the bidding process still. It hasn't occurred.
Oh, so there really hasn't been any kind of...
No, it hasn't been through that. And hopefully, that'll come out okay, because that can slow the project down too if the funding isn't quite adequate to achieve the bids.
So with this... I would imagine it's down to the gnat's eyelash with all the details. How long does it take? Are these documents, have they been made available? It just hasn't been made available for bidding? Or is this going to be the first time all the contractors have a chance really to start looking at this thing and pour through it?
I think this is, as you point out, this is going to be the first time they've had to see it. The environmental document is ready. I mean, but that, you know, 6-8 years in the making, a big voluminous thing, that's not something they're interested in looking at. But the construction bids will be ready in a few months, and I'm sure they'll be interested in seeing that.
KINS, News and Information Times, 431.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. We think of the Coast Guard as being gallant lifesavers, and they are. However, there's another side of the Coast Guard, faceless bureaucrats far away. 3 years ago, one wrote to the Humboldt County Fair Association to say they wanted back the Mendocino Lighthouse lens that's been atop the county fair's main entrance for 63 years. The fair offered to build a new building for the lens. A citizen group, Save Our Lens, began to raise money. Then the Ferndale Museum offered to give the lens a new home. Most letters to the Coast Guard have gone unanswered. 2 weeks ago, though, in an undated letter, the Coast Guard warned Ferndale it would soon send a Lampus to begin removing the lens. They didn't say when he'd arrive or give his name, but we think it's Grinch. In Rome 2,000 years ago, the famous orator Cicero spoke of the arrogance of officialdom. If he were here today, he'd put those Coast Guard bureaucrats in that category. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 4:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Arnie Herskovic. Arnie, the road challenges that we're experiencing now, we've got flooding in the low-lying areas.
Mm-hmm.
We've got I'm familiar, a couple of roads in Brookings area. Carpenterville, the old Highway
probably
101.
Probably up in Trinidad, too.
I mean, it's a bit of an issue. Stagecoach Road
mm-hmm.
has a slide. We've got the little one, Southern Humboldt, also. How challenging is it to design these roads and to maintain them with the ability to withstand these heavy rains or seasonal weather?
It's very challenging, Brian. I think all the county public works people, you know, will tell you the same thing. It's, you know, their budget are not exactly flush these days, and the ability to maintain these roads in our county as well as in counties north of us is pretty much compromised these days. And the minute a major storm comes along, it shows us just how much we don't have the maintenance thing down. You know, we need more maintenance on a lot of our roads, and that's the bottom line. And it's expensive. And unfortunately, if the state cuts our funding back, which they've done, and or takes revenue from us and shifts and things, we are, you know, at a compromised position to provide that maintenance. I know Tom Mattson would agree with me. We need to do more maintenance in our county.
Actually, you're agreeing with him, Tom.
I am agreeing
Wednesday.
With him. Yeah, I'm agreeing with him. And the reality is, we don't do enough maintenance. We see that all over the county. And unfortunately, you know, you wind up getting inconvenienced or cut off in certain areas. Some areas, unfortunately, are very difficult to maintain. Trinidad is a good example. The slide in Southern Humboldt, I understand, is now causing some problems that we thought we had a pretty good handle on. And there's one lane traffic through there currently. So it's very, very difficult to keep the level of maintenance up, particularly in an era of declining budget revenue and shifts and takeaways from Sacramento.
When Tom was on Wednesday, it was interesting. He was talking about the per mile compensation the state gives the county,
mm-hmm.
not for the Caltrans roads. So that's obviously
different. Yeah, county roads, right?
And with Carpenterville being in Oregon, it's a little mm-hmm. different. But like for Stagecoach,
sure.
and some of these, but the county, Humboldt County, gets $5,600 a mile.
Yeah, which is
and the maintenance, the annual maintenance is about $60,000. Kind of gives you an idea. The discrepancy, but also how much it does cost for a culvert or overlays and some of that other kind of stuff per mile.
Yeah.
Okay. But in Orange County, they're getting $180,000 a mile. So
yeah.
it's the rural versus the yeah. urban thing is a bit of a challenge, I would think. But I wouldn't at least think that Caltrans is under the same thing, because that's one entity rather than one of 58 entities. Does Caltrans have that discrepancy also in rural areas?
Well, of course, you got to figure that in Southern California, they don't have the weather we have here, because the storms that we get don't always hit them, and so they by the time they reach them. But on the other hand, the traffic volumes they generate in Orange County.
Yeah, the
County,
wear and tear.
The wear and tear is humongous. I mean, we have truck wear and tear, a little bit different kind of wear and tear, and we have local roads that you know, are very difficult to keep maintained. They have, on the other hand, just tens of thousands of vehicles per hour on those roads, just chewing them up. And so it's a different, and of course, they're all freeway and major thoroughfares. We have much smaller scale roads. But the cost per mile, yeah, they're getting about three times as much as we are to maintain their roads. So their roads tend to be a little bit better, but they're, you know, we just have different kind of challenges here than they have. That's an easy way to sum it up. Caltrans, on the other hand, has to figure out how to allocate this. Of course, the power in the legislature is much stronger in Southern California, so I'm sure their funding is always kept at a certain level. We have a more difficult time. We have good, fairly good representatives, but they're not able to, you know, to do battle with the big boys that take up most of the maintenance budget and send it south of here.
Good. Well, we'll talk about those really strong elected official types when we come back and we talk about redevelopment agency, what the governor's doing, what the votes have been, and perhaps what the future may hold.
Sure.
In 10 days. Yeah. KINS, News and Information Times, 439. We'll be back with more from Arnie Herskovic.
Yeah, big time.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
Hi, this is Craig Brown, Dean of Students and Campus Ministry at St. Bernard's Catholic School. We're praying in these days how we can create an even more definite presence of Christ in the world around us. We pray we all have an opportunity to stop the rush of this time of year to give profound thanks for the many blessings our Lord has showered on us.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 443. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Arnie Herskovic. Arnie, got a couple of topics. Let's start with Redevelopment Agency. We've had two of the three city managers that regularly visit us in so far this month. We're 10 days out from this thing being executed, I guess, at this point. What are you hearing about the Redevelopment Agencies in the state of California?
It's pretty dire, Brian. I mean, there is some movement to try to forestall the February 1 reorganization deadline, but it's still nevertheless going to be a reorganization in which all the redevelopment agencies ultimately, whether it's this next month or 2 months from now or three, will be folded in, and most likely the cities will become the successor agencies inheriting all their, you know, assets. Unfortunately, I don't know if people, no one really knows probably what's going to happen to the liabilities in terms of the loans and payments. Those will still continue into the future. But the reality is it's an unfortunate episode because the economic livelihood and the benefit that came with redevelopment agencies will be gone. And it's very difficult to bring it back once you take it away. It's very difficult. So the reality is we'll lose that economic engine in California, and it's worth many tens of thousands of jobs in our economy. Now, people would argue that you're just shifting revenue back, you know, it is going back to Sacramento. So basically, we're taking the fruits of our labors, the tax revenue, the increased base we've created over the last 30 years in Eureka, and we're sending it to Sacramento. There's something wrong with that picture. I mean, we're the ones who put all the hard effort and energy, and people took risks in fixing their buildings up, and you know, did the good work and created the employment and the opportunities and paid the taxes. And now,
so like the facade improvement,
right,
and all those types of things.
All those things. We did all that hard work, and now, what is the benefit? The benefit at the end is we're sending it down to Sacramento. They're going to take it and reallocate it as they see fit. I have a hard time, obviously, with that.
So as you look at what that means, you mentioned before the break about the electeds at the state, Chesbrough and Evans for us. Have they stepped up on this? I mean, I know they're scrambling now, but did you sense that they were leading the charge at all on trying to save redevelopment early on when this was put out initially as being an area that was at risk?
You know, I don't think too many Democrats at all stood up in Sacramento, either ours or anyone else from around the state for redevelopment. Most of them just decided, well, the governor wants to do this, so we'll go along with it. Some of the Republicans even, in fact, stood up and said, hey, wait a minute, We have good redevelopment programs. They're great in our community. We need to keep them. But ultimately, the vast majority of legislators said, well, we're okay, fine, we'll do it, and that's the way it is, as a way to help the state's budget with the 1.7 to almost $2 billion a year in revenue.
Not understanding what they were voting on?
Well, they understand it, but I think the votes appear to have been there, so to speak. But unfortunately, the economic benefit and the impact that, both small and large throughout the state, and also going to be layoffs occurring. There's going to be a lot of layoffs of people who are going to lose their jobs. And particularly, we're seeing it already. There's notices have gone out in Oakland and San Jose. Hundreds of employees are going to lose their jobs.
Private or in the governmental sector?
In the government sector. And not an easy job to replace at this time in our economy. So, some people may have entrepreneurial skills they can take to the private sector. They might be able to be placed. But, they could, it's not a good time to create major mass unemployment in our economy.
So you sense that there might be some optimism, some likelihood, or is it snuffed out and you'll be surprised if there is redevelopment?
There won't be redevelopment, I don't believe, at all at this point. It's too late in the game. I think basically what you're going to see is a possible shift in the ultimate deadline in which the city's redevelopment agency would have to be reorganized by. Right now it's February 1st, which is pretty close, 10 days away. Maybe it'll get extended to April 30th or June 30th or something like that. But ultimately, it's going to be the same decision point. The agency will go away and the city will become the successor agency to that. And they will basically be a caretaker to try to deal with the assets, the existing land holdings they have, the existing debts they have, et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of a liquidation process, as it were.
Looking at, you'd mentioned during the break about the Old Town area of Eureka that you're sensing a lot of turnover. I forget who I was with even driving through, and there's a surprising amount of open storefronts right now.
Vacancies, yes.
Apparently with more to come,
yes.
Based on what you know. I would think that it should be really concerning to somebody looking at a prime retail area, historic area, or tourist-based area, and if you've got 10, 15, 20% vacancy, at some point it's called blight. Do you sense that there's going to be any backfilling, or is Eureka really going to have to look hard at it because the Plaza doesn't have that as a situation?
It's hard to tell, but my sense of it, Brian, is that it's still a very desirable location to be in. So they could possibly, by the spring, you see some businesses who are not situated in Old Town or downtown moving in that direction. And there's possibility for expansion, too. Then historically, though, Old Town business locations have filled up fairly well. This is just a sign of the times, unfortunately. The economy is fairly soft. So owners of buildings, too, I've talked to several of them recently. For the first time, I've heard them say the word, we are willing to negotiate. In the years past, they were not willing to negotiate. They just said, this is my price, my per square foot, and if you want it, it's yours. But otherwise, now
to the point of reinvesting in their properties to make them current?
Oh, I think so. There's a few that are still, out there that need to be dealt with.
Not the masonry issue.
Not the masonry, right. But, Old Town has a certain flair and flavor to it, but it has commanded fairly strong rent lease costs in the past. I think now what's happening is people are saying, well, wait a minute, maybe we have to do a graduated payment lease where we lease it for a little bit less than it normally would get, but we bring it up in a couple of years as the economy improves and as we fix the building up. And that's a good way to look at it. I think that's a very valid position to be in right now, as opposed to, I'm going to stick for my price, and if I don't get it, by Jove, I'll sit here and let it sit vacant for the next 5 years. That doesn't work.
No, but we've seen that theory applied on a regular basis in some of those buildings in that general region.
Yeah, that's right. As I say, I've talked to several, at least a half a dozen or more owners, and I'm hearing a much softer position than I've ever heard in the past, which means to me that it signals that they are willing to negotiate. They're willing to look at new businesses coming in, even startups that want to come in. That's great. The Small Business Development Center, Michael Kraft will talk more about that, and initiatives that they have available to help small businesses both get financing as well as training and get them ready to go. So that's good.
Good stuff. Enjoy the weekend, buddy.
Likewise. I hope it stays a little drier maybe for the big game.
Yeah, might be nice. go swim to your car.
Okay.
We've been Talking Shop with Arnie Herskovic. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug somebody you love and see you tomorrow morning.